And welcome to A Good Goodbye, a funeral planning for those who don't plan to die. Now, this program's a little bit different. Host Gail Rubin calls herself the doyen of death. Well, that sounds pretty impressive. It's all about getting the funeral planning conversation started. The doyen is a woman who considered senior in a group and knows a lot about a particular subject. Well, that's Gail. She's the one you'd call to plan the party that no one wants to plan, a funeral or memorial service. Now, this show, A Good Goodbye, rolls back some of the mystery and will share tools that can reduce stress at times of grief and minimize family conflict and have a good goodbye. That's what this program's all about. Just talking about sex will make you pregnant. Talking about funerals won't make you dead, and your family will benefit from the conversation. So, here to talk about some of the subjects that we sometimes avoid, host and author of A Good Goodbye, Gail Rubin.
On February 2nd of 2014, an essay titled Ashes to Ashes, But First a Nice Pine Box appeared in the New York Times Sunday Review section. It was written by Dr. Jeffrey Heeler, and when I read his opinion piece, I felt I needed to find him and invite him to be on the program today to provide us with his great insights about accepting mortality and celebrating life. And I'm very pleased to have Dr. Jeffrey Heeler with me on the line today for today's show. Welcome.
Welcome to you too. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, Dr. Heeler, you are a retired thoracic surgeon. You live near Kansas City, and you wrote about building your own coffin and how you came to do this. Would you mind explaining to the audience a little bit about your situation and what brought you to do this?
Sure. I've had, when I was 54 years old, I was diagnosed with prostate cancer. And I'm 66 now. Mm-hmm. And I went through the initial evaluation, and I had surgery, and we initially had some hopes that that would take care of it, but the disease recurred, and it basically kept recurring despite radiation therapy and then multiple chemotherapy options and immunotherapy and hormone therapy and, you know, all the stuff that you can throw at prostate cancer. And for about the last maybe 4.5 to 5 years, I've had extensive metastatic disease to my bone. So I am stage 4 prostate cancer. I am categorically incurable. Although, you know, when one talks about years with stage 4 disease, obviously one has to say, well, things have gone better than stage 4 disease treats a lot of other people, and I would be the first to admit that. But the truth is that I'm running out of options, and I think that every oncologist that I've been to would be in agreement that I'm getting close to losing this fight that I've had with this disease. So in that context, I attended a funeral last summer, and it was a horribly tragic funeral. It was a 19-year-old boy. It was a very close friend of my daughter's who died of an accidental drug overdose. And no one knew he was taking drugs, and it's just one of these horrible things. And I was sitting in the congregation, and he had an open casket, and it was a very plush affair. It looked like it weighed 10 tons, this behemoth of mahogany and cushions, and the casket was open, and there he was, And I looked at that, and I've done a lot of thinking about my own funeral, because I'm sort of a controlling sort of guy, as most surgeons are. And I said, you know, I'm just not comfortable in a big mahogany plush box like that. So I knew that they were going to cremate this young man, and so obviously he was just and it was pretty obvious they weren't going to burn up this box. I don't know, there were just too many incongruities for me. Now let me just quickly say that I have absolutely no criticism of anyone who makes those decisions to put, you know, someone in something like that. There's nothing more personal than those choices, that's fine. It just wasn't for me. And I looked at that and I said, you know, I'm just kind of a plain pine box kind of guy. And I kind of thought some more, and I said, you know, the way to kind of come to grips with that that desire to be a little more pure and simple, and at the same time to kind of get to grips with the fact that I'm dying, would be to make my own box. And so that was the germ behind starting this whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing I'd like to mention is there is the possibility that young man's casket was a rental casket. People can do that. And then,
oh, I'm sure it was. No, I'm sure.
Oh, okay.
It was. Yeah. That's what I mean. That's why I know that they weren't going to put that into the flames.
Right.
Yeah.
But then what you did write about is very often people are cremated in alternative containers, which are very often recycled cardboard. And you thought you wanted something a little more, I don't know, pure or just elemental. You and wood.
Yep. I think that's true. I even though old pizza containers are made of wood at some point in their existence, there's something about being part of that recycled process that didn't really strike me as what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And so the option of going back one step, going in the chain the chain of production of everything that's around us, and bypassing the pizza containers and the first drafts and the ice cream containers, and going back, all those things that go into recycled material, I thought I'd go back to the very basic, which is the wood that it all came from.
Well, and very interesting, in your essay you talk about that you actually used recycled wood that I guess used to be in a...
Yeah, that is true. I have absolutely no woodworking skills whatsoever. I can use my hands, obviously, as a surgeon. I was pretty comfortable with that. But I had no woodworking skills. And so, but I was immediately rescued from that fault by a good friend who is an artist who works in a number of different modalities, but especially wood. And so I looked up this is my friend Peter here in Kansas City, and I spoke with him about the project. And Peter has a shop, and, there certainly was no small hurdle, maybe you want to talk about this at some point, no small hurdle getting both his approval and my family's approval for all this. But in his shop, he did have some boards, which he had rescued from the demolition of an old factory. And these were 6 to 8 inches wide, yellow pine, they're kind of varying thickness, 1 to 2 inches thick. And, you know, they just looked awful. But he said, Jeff, you scrape off what's on the outside of these and you will be amazed at what's inside. And it turns out he was right.
Mm-hmm.
But there certainly was an initial hurdle getting my family on board for this project.
Well, and in fact, you start out your column you know, talking about your wife's reaction when you informed her after you all have a nice glass of wine and seem relaxed that you're going to build your own coffin. And it didn't
She was absolutely horrified. Well, maybe even worse than horrified. I mean, you know, there was this moment of sort of disbelief, and then why in the world would you want to do that? And I'd have to say that when I present this concept to other people, that's pretty much their idea too. Why in the world would you want to do this? But then my wife, you know, being a wife, she has the prerogative of saying, "Stop! Don't do it." I said, "Well, we'll just talk about it some other time." And I have to say, I really did push it too far that night. This wasn't in the article, but I said this was really pushing my luck. I said, "Well, and while we're at it, I could have my son Ben, who is 26 years old, he could come down and help with a little sanding and kind of work on it too." And that was the straw that really put her over the edge. I mean, she said, "Absolutely no."
Why do you think she did that?
Well, what? I think there were two things going on. I think that her reaction was one that that most people have, was that this is going to channel all my energy into something which is morose, something which is not positive, something which is going to be a constant reminder of death. So I think, and that is absolutely the reaction that I've had with most people when I bring this up.
Mm-hmm.
When I threw my son into the mix, that's maybe a little more complicated in that I think that we wanted to maybe protect my two youngest children, aged 26 and 24, maybe protect them a little bit. They're both a little more vulnerable, and we thought maybe they should kind of get into this pretty slowly and not so abruptly.
Yeah. Jeff, we're going to take a little quick break here, but we'll continue the conversation when we come back.
Okay.
Thanks.
Host Gail Rubin returns after this short break to give you more of her insight on a good goodbye.
Looking for a way to start the funeral planning conversation? You can find great tools to break the ice at agoodgoodbye.com. The award-winning book, A Good Goodbye, Funeral Planning for Those Who Don't Plan to Die, provides everything you will need to know before you go. You can download a copy of The Newly Dead Game. It's like The Newly Wed Game, but the questions test how well you know someone else's last wishes. There are great DVDs, such as Making Sense of Final Arrangements and Funeral Costs, and the TV interview series, A Good Goodbye, Get Questions to Ask and Find Out What You Need to Know Now Before There's a Death in the Family. And download a free planning form from agoodgoodbye.com. Get all your key information pulled together in one place. Visit agoodgoodbye.com today. Your loved ones will thank you.
As a member of the baby boomer generation, you want insights and ideas that factor into planning for, making choices about, and activating your new or mothballed dreams. As a boomer, you can learn how to act on your visions by tuning into the Awakening to Awareness show on Tuesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern. If you are inspired to follow your own path, step into new directions, and are excited about what you, as a recent or soon-to-be retiree, can do with your life, this is your show. Listen to the show that focuses on self-belief and possibilities for emerging seniors who look forward to life's third act with dread or amazing promise. Host Eric Tonigson and his guests share entertaining ideas and explore strategies to reignite your passions and shift your intentions into action. In his naturally curious and motivating ways, Eric explores personal values, shares wisdom, and encourages you to unlock and live your potential and purpose. Join Eric and his Awakening to Awareness show on Tuesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on the TogiNet. Talk Radio Network. Welcome back to A Good Goodbye, an honest conversation about the party no one wants to plan. Drawing on years as a speaker and author, she has unique insight on how to get the conversation started. Now we return to A Good Goodbye and host, Gail Rubin.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Jeff Peeler, who wrote a really interesting essay in the New York Times that ran on February 2nd about building his own coffin for his eventual demise, which you had written because you are a retired thoracic surgeon. As they say in medical speak, you're getting close to circling the drain or something along those lines.
That's it, circling the drain.
Yeah. So I love your honest approach to mortality and the fact that you wanted to be involved in this project, and yet the reaction of family and friends is like, "Ooh, that's so morbid." Yet it sounds like you found it to be very life affirming.
I absolutely. No, this was a project that. Let me just say, it was never a woodworking project. It was never a couple of guys getting together, drinking beer, or making something out of wood. Peter and I knew from the outset that this was something different. That we were making, something that had a deep meaning and was making a statement. And it's hard to be totally trivial, although, we had many, many light moments, and we did drink a lot of beer. but it's hard to be totally trivial when you're laying on the floor and someone's making an outline of your body with a pencil to see how big a piece of wood you need underneath you in your coffin. And it's a very sobering process. But as it turned out, we did indeed start out with the idea that, we were building this, but at some point it became apparent, and without words to both of us, that really the coffin was building us. And it continued to do that, and actually continues to do that. And I think that if I have time to talk to people about it, then people sort of pause and there I get a little look of, oh, well, okay. And that was the point behind the article, was people are so terrified to talk about dying. And what I have found is that by building this box, it's sort of a green light for me to think about my death in positive terms, and also it's a green light for others to feel at ease to talk about it with me. And both of those arenas have been immensely profitable to me in terms of how I view death and how comfortable I am in accepting the fact that I'm going to die. And I don't know when I'm going to die, but it's not going to be too terribly long from now.
Mm-hmm. One of the sentences that you wrote was, while the coffin is indeed a reminder of what awaits us all, its true message is to live every moment in its greatest potential.
I think that summarizes it. People talk about, the fight against cancer, and I don't know how many of your audience are dealing with cancer or who have dealt with cancer, but I think most people with cancer sort of resent that term, because you really don't feel like you're fighting. This is something that you really have no control over, and this idea of fighting is not a good one. And you're doing the best you can. And idea that the coffin is somehow a resigning yourself to the fact that you're giving up this desire to live is exactly opposite of the truth. I found that by just knowing that this box is there, I have, you know, a concrete reminder of, you know, the most elemental of all human conditions besides birth, and that's death. And it's going to happen, and it's going to happen to everyone listening. And, you know, I guess even those not listening.
they can listen later on the podcast.
There you go. And, you know, I mean, I think that the obligation is not to get all bound up in the fact that, you know, we're going to die and bury your head from living. It's really quite the opposite. What you need to do is to accept that and then make the very best of every moment that you have. And for me, that's what this project has done, and that's what the box does. It's not only a symbol of that, and that's not defiance at all. It's just acknowledging the fact. But it's sort of a gentle reminder to me that every day deserves your very best, and that includes seeing the miracles that are out there all around you every day, and it includes being a better person every day, and it includes being incredibly grateful for what you have. And that's what the box tells me, and that's what the process of making it imparted on.
Mm-hmm. And it gave you perspective, too. You wrote that it's pretty much impossible to feel anger at someone for driving too slowly in front of you in traffic when you've just come from sanding your own coffin.
That is certainly true. Pretty much everything falls into line when you're, you know, and that's what you're doing in your spare time. I think going a little deeper into that, I mean, I think that, you know, all of us are born pretty pure, and we're issued a knapsack at some early time in our life, and we start adding bricks to that knapsack as we go through life, you know, and the bricks are not all good, you know. A lot of them are, you know, short-temperedness and anger and materialism and jealousy and holding grudges and, you know, all these bad things that we all kind of carry around with us. And if you do the one simple thing, well, maybe it's not so simple, I don't know, but it's come around to be simple for me, which is to just accept the fact that you're going to die. Then all of a sudden, it's like, you know, there's a hand coming in there and just unloading those bricks just as fast as they have ever been put in there. And you find that you view life in a totally different way. You see grace in strangers. You know, when I go out to pick up my newspaper in the morning, I go to the end of the driveway, stop, and I listen to two cardinals talking to each other, and I'm just absolutely mesmerized at the beauty of that communication between those two birds. And I wave at people driving by on their way to work, and, you know, I see beauty in the smiles. It's a very different way to live, and I think it's sort of the default position of man, and unfortunately, you can't quite get there until you accept the fact that you're going to die. You don't have to be actually, you know, have terminal cancer, but our society doesn't want to take that step of saying, yep, this is what's going to happen, and then I need to kind of put my life in order, taking that into account. And, you know, I think if you do that, so much of human behavior is absolute folly, you know, acquiring things and all this. I mean, it's so foolish. And, you know, really what's important, I mean, really, when you get down to it, are human relationships. I mean, it, it's all loving family, loving friends, and this whole process has brought me so much closer to my family. I've found friends, especially including Peter, but others too, that I never dreamt that I would have of this quality in my life. And all I've done is accept the obvious, that I'm going to die.
Mm-hmm. And do the family and friends, have they adjusted and kind of incorporated that attitude as well?
Well, it's, you know, everyone has to kind of work their own way along this trail. And it's fair to say we don't all go together.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been many times where I was, well, I think it's fair to say I've always been further along the trail than other members of my family. That's perhaps the way it's going to be. I mean, they're going to lose me, and they're going to have to do, in many ways, more of the hard work of grieving, and they're going to do more hard work than I am. I just got to lay there and let it happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's fair to say that they have been not as always in the same place that I am. On the other hand, my wife and I we talk all the time about when I'm not here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've done all the obvious things, which everyone should do, you know, the things like, wills and make sure that things are titled right and, you know, all that kind of stuff, which I'm sure this audience is very familiar with.
Well, I'm always harping about that.
That's kind of a given here. And,
But we need to take a little break at this point. I'm sorry. But when we come back, we'll continue the conversation and talk about what you and your wife are talking about, when you are not here anymore. If you're listening live and you want to call in, the number is 866-404-6519. We'll be right back.
Host Gail Rubin returns after this short break to give you more of her insight on a good goodbye. If you could live your life truly standing in a place of peace, joy, and abundance, wouldn't that make your heart soar? Now you can, with Lessons in Joyful Living, with your host, Kimberly Rinaldi, Mondays at noon Central on the Rockstar Radio Network. Kimberly Rinaldi, having created a highly successful coaching practice, now teaches Lessons in Joyful Living. She believes in empowering others and that through it, you have the ability to break through any and all barriers, thus allowing you to reach your greatest potential and joyfully step into your life's purpose. What used to take weeks, months, or even years, she can now teach you in a matter of hours with her programs. For more on Kim and her show, go to her website, KimberlyRinaldi.com. That's RINALDI.com. Then join us for Lessons in Joyful Living with your host, Kimberly Rinaldi, Mondays at noon Central here on the Rockstar Radio Network.
Compassion and Choices helps people plan for and achieve a good death. Looking for end-of-life counseling with support and advice from professionally trained counselors? We're here for you. Need help with advanced planning? We offer access to useful documents, including advanced directives for every state. Want change and choice in your state? We're advocates in courtrooms and state legislatures, bringing much-needed attention to end-of-life issues that affect us all. We're working to change attitudes, practices, and policies so everyone can access the information and options they need to have more control and comfort at the end of life. You can make a difference in your community, too. Learn more at our website, CompassionandChoices.com.
Welcome back to A Good Goodbye, an honest conversation about the party no one wants to plan. Drawing on years as a speaker and author, she has unique insight on how to get the conversation started. Now we return to A Good Goodbye and host Gail Rubin.
Welcome back. We're continuing our conversation with Dr. Jeff Peeler. So, Jeff, when we went to the break, we were starting to talk about the discussions you and your wife have been having about what it'll be like after you're gone. What were you leading towards talking about in that regard?
Well, you know, I have... I mentioned earlier my desire to sort of control this process, and there have been times where I've clearly over controlled it or tried to. Not with my wife. Jean and I have been totally open with each other, and you know, we have conversations now. I show her how you have to reset the VCR, and everyone knows why she needs to know that, and you know where the tax forms are kept, and you know this is all just the way it is, and it's gotten to a point where it's sort of unsaid why these things need to be discussed, but it's totally accepted, and we've also had the very hard discussion. When I'm not here, what relationships are you going to feel comfortable with? And, you know, my feelings about, you know, I want her to be the happiest woman in the world. And I put her through so much the last 10 years. And I would be ecstatic if she could make up for lost time in her life, however she felt it was appropriate. So those are pretty elemental discussions. On the other hand, we've been, and I think I've erred on trying to protect people a little bit from that, from the grieving process. And I'd say particularly with regard to my children, I've got four children, ranging from age 38 down to my daughter who's 24, and I have a son, 26, and a daughter, 24. And for the two younger kids, my wife and I have perceived to be a bit more vulnerable about this whole process. And so we've sort of spared them the play-by-play, if you will, the result of every scan. And my older boys have been interested in that, and I've shared it with them. But the younger, not so much. And so, you know, I told my friend Peter about my desire that maybe the coffin project, which we were engaged in at the time, if he runs into my kids or something, was something that my wife and I had decided not to share with them at this point during the construction phase. And Peter, in his wisdom, said, you know, Jeff, I think they're very much old enough to handle this, and you're really doing them a disservice by keeping them separate from this very important part of your life right now, that they should share in this whole process, and they should share in the meaning of it. And he said that if you don't give people a chance to express the full range of their emotion and reaction to what you're going through, then when you leave them, there's a feeling that there's so much left unsaid. That, gee, if I'd known that, I would have said this to Dad. And I came to see that he was right. And so, with my wife's permission, and of course by then the New York Times piece was going to come out, and so that, you know, that certainly forced my hand, because I didn't want my two kids, the youngest kids, to hear about this from someone else. Mm-hmm. And so I went to first my 26-year-old son, and I explained what I was doing all these days that I was down at the shop with Peter. And I said, I've written something about it, which I actually submitted to a newspaper, and it was accepted, and would you like to read it? And interestingly, he said, no. he didn't want to read it. He just wanted to kind of think about what I'd told him that thus far, and he was not terribly comfortable with going any further with it at that point. And I said, okay. And then a day or so later, I spoke to my daughter, and she's much more sort of auditory in her learning than visual. And I explained to her what I'd been doing, and she kind of paused for a second, and I said, would you like me to read to you what I've sent in to the New York Times that was accepted? And she said, yeah. And she and I have a very close relationship. And so we both kind of popped up onto her bed with a dog and a cat, and I started reading. And I read her the piece. And at the end, she paused and said, well, I need to think about that too. but I could tell that she was in a different place. She was much more at ease with it. And I said, well, you know, if you have any questions, you want to talk about it some more anytime with, you know, I'll make time. And that's, there's nothing more important in my life than giving you time to understand all this.
Mm-hmm.
And so about 2 days later, I was sitting in our living room reading, and she came up to me, and she's a calligrapher as a part-time hobby. And she came up to me with a piece of paper, and written on this piece of paper in absolutely exquisite calligraphy was the quote, which is embossed on the underside of the coffin lid. And the quote is, I have loved the stars too fondly to be fearful of the night. A beautiful quote. And she had done that in calligraphy. And she handed it to me, and she said, Daddy, I want you to have this, and I want it to go in the coffin with you. I want you to have something now that I worked really hard on, and something that'll bring you joy, and something that you know will be with you.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, so there, I'd have to say, you know, besides the immediate rush of emotion, of just love, you know, I mean, that's, what else can you say? I also felt kind of foolish that I'd kept this from her. But I also felt very relieved that I had broken this bottleneck, and that her emotions could flow out. And subsequent to that, my youngest son, he has come around. He's read the piece, and I called him the other day, or I guess actually he called me. I was down at the shop with Peter, and we were doing the final. We were putting handles on the coffin, and you know, Ben asked me, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I'm down here with Peter. We're putting the handles on." And he said, "Well, make sure that they're going to hold. I don't want you dropping through this thing." So, you know, I think that's his way of accepting this whole thing too. You know, and everyone has to do it their own way. But
well,
I think we're all on the same path, maybe in little different places, but we're all headed for the same destination.
Yeah. We actually have a phone call for you. A lady named Kyle would like to speak to you. Are you available? Hello?
I am.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Where are you calling from?
I have to turn off my, because I'm listening to this. I'm calling from Doylestown, Pennsylvania, and I wrote a response that was published in the New York Times.
Really?
I did, because I'm so touched by this, and I was so happy to see that Jeff was going to be on your show tonight. I'm trying to start this little business of helping people plan their funerals in advance, And I'm just so glad that there's people out there already, like, doing it and talking about it. And I just want to just say how touched I am and appreciative of what you're doing and putting your story out there so that other people can be influenced and inspired to do it. Because knowing that it was hard and that your family struggled with it at first and you persevered, I feel like that's so great for other families to hear and other individuals to hear, like to press on if you feel inclined to do that, because I feel like the joy that's going to come out of it is so great.
Well, I couldn't agree more, and thank you for your thoughts. The truth is my pulpit is about 6 inches high. I don't, what works for me may not work for someone else, but I can say that without question that this is a topic that people really do, deep down in their hearts, want to talk about. Mm-hmm. And it's something that our society clearly struggles with. People sort of go off to the hospital and die, and someone else deals with the realities of a dead body and, all these things. But the fact is, there's so much beauty to be lived before all that. And you really only have that possibility if you would acknowledge it and talk about it. And so it has certainly worked for me. And I applaud your work at getting others to talk about it. It's not something that I do easily, honestly. It may not seem it, but I'm really a very private person, and this is not something that I do with ease to talk about this. But it's been such an epiphany for me that I do think that it's a message that I'd like to get out. And I've had to give up my surgical practice because my fingers at some point went numb from the chemotherapy. So I've had a hard time helping people, and this is a way that I can help people.
Absolutely. We have to take our last break, but we will come back and continue the conversation with Dr. Jeff Peeler.
Host Gail Rubin returns after this short break to give you more of her insight on a good goodbye.
Laughing in the Face of Death, funny films for funeral planning, ashes to ashes, dust in your face, cremation, comedy, and creativity, the Viking funeral on film, Hollywood myth versus fact. These are just a few creative presentations by Gail Rubin, host and author of A Good Goodbye, Funeral Planning for Those Who Don't Plan to Die. Using humor and movies, Gail attracts audiences to difficult-to-discuss topics and helps start serious conversations. By talking before there's a death, families can reduce stress, minimize conflict, save money, and create a meaningful, memorable, good goodbye. What can Gail's presentations do for you? Call her at 505-265-7215. That's 505-265-7215. Or visit agoodgoodbye.com.
In the annals of recorded history, there has never been anything that can compare to home movies. But now, in this modern era, where do you turn for the best information? Right here. It's the Home Movie Legacy Project, hosted by Rhonda Vigent. Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Central here on the Rockstar Radio Network. Learn how to organize, digitize, share on social media, use as genealogy research, repurpose, or even monetize found footage. Discover ways to find films about your own family that you didn't even know existed. Or create a documentary that can use the power of home movies to deliver a message that can impact the lives of many. For more on Rhonda and the show, go to our website, homemovielegacy.com. Then be here as the journey continues with the Home Movie Legacy Project with Rhonda Vigent. Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Central here on the Rockstar Radio Network. Welcome back to A Good Goodbye. An honest conversation about the party no one wants to plan. Drawing on years as a speaker and author, she has unique insight on how to get the conversation started. Now we return to A Good Goodbye and host, Rubin.
Welcome back. Continuing the conversation with Dr. Jeff Peeler. And, you know, you've been a medical doctor, a thoracic surgeon. I mean, they cut people's chests open. And were you working on hearts or lungs? Or?
Yeah, I did all that. Yeah. I did open heart surgery for about 20 years. And in the last 5 years of my practice, I pretty much specialized in just cancer surgery of the lungs and esophagus.
So you've been a doctor and you've dealt with patients and their families, and now for the past 10 years you've been a patient dealing with the medical establishment. What kind of advice would you give to patients and their families who are dealing with serious diagnoses from both your perspectives as a doctor and a patient?
Well, I think, you know, I think that these days, the level of communication between physicians is so advanced that with very, very few exceptions, there's not one person who has, you know, a solution to a problem that no one else does. And I think that people have a tendency, particularly when they hear bad news, to, you know, go someplace else and try to find good news. Mm. And I think that that's, you know, I think people should get as many opinions as they feel comfortable with. But I would also say that at some point, one has to accept where you are, and to go with the options that are presented. I have not, you know, scurried around the country looking for this guy or that guy. I have decided, and this is just my personal decision, I have decided to find a group of physicians here in town who I have confidence in, who I know want nothing but to give me the best care that they can, and who I know care for me as a person. And I have simply said, I will do what you want. I suppose, the medical knowledge to second guess them, but I don't. And I would recommend that approach to others. It's quite a bit harder being a physician with cancer, certainly terminal cancer, than I think if one is not sort of groomed in the medical profession. You know, a physician simply knows too much.
Mm-hmm.
And I know every little grimace on my oncologist's face when he comes into the room that he's got bad news to deliver to me. And when he kind of shifts in his chair, I know that he's thinking of how to parse words a little bit. And, you know, so it's having been on that side of it, I understand that. And it is, so I think it is harder to be a physician because you just know, you know what the course of the disease is. And you know, you've seen people die, and dying from cancer is not always an easy death. And everyone who has lived that knows that. Now, I have no idea what the quality of my death is going to be in terms of physical challenge. Mm-hmm. But I'm not afraid of it, and I know that I'll be well cared for. Now, having said all that, I mean, I think you do need to go to a place that has experience in your particular problem, and if I guess I'm thinking specifically of cancer, I think it's you don't want to, I think, go to an institution or a physician who sees, you know, one case per year of whatever it is you might have. So I think it is important to find people with experience. But short of that, I think it's important to surround yourself with people that you feel confident, have your best interests at heart, and who care for you, and are going to, you know, be willing to stay on the lookout for everything that's new, and and make that available to you. Mm-hmm. I've had several treatments, including the one that I'm doing right now, which for logistical reasons were not available in my home hospital here in Kansas City. And with the absolute blessing of my oncology team, I went up to actually to Lincoln, Nebraska, and found, and they put me in touch with an oncology group up there who were a couple of weeks ahead of getting each of these treatment things, and we wanted to get them started. And so I went there, and I think it's important to be to find a treatment team that's not afraid to send you elsewhere if they think that there's someone else who might have, you know, a 1 or 2 week advantage if indeed your survival is measured in those terms. On the other hand, I think I feel very sad for the people that go to Mexico and do various what I would consider non-traditional therapies. I'm certainly not saying that American medicine has all the answers, and I know that that there are answers to be found in all kinds of different natural substances. I'll accept that, but I think that the people that go sort of from one to the next to the next to the next without simply stopping and saying death is coming and the job now is not to keep looking for some hope for cure, but what the job is now is to accept death, and to, by accepting that, enjoy the last moments that you have. And that is incredibly possible for everyone. You just have to stop and enjoy what's there. See the beauty in the world and the beauty that surrounds you.
Mm-hmm. Will you be going on hospice care at some point when you feel like you're getting to that end point?
Yeah, you know, I'm not there yet. I would do whatever my family wants with that regard. And let me just say this, you know, my wife and I have had the kind of hard conversation such as this. I turned to her, this was probably about 6 months ago. We were kind of laying in bed going off to sleep, and I said, you know, it might be really creepy for you if I die in this bed. Would you like me to die? I definitely want to die at home. No question about that. And then I think she's at ease with that. But I said, would it feel better to you after I'm gone if I have not died in this bed? And I said, I'm absolutely happy to do whatever, if that's something that I just want you to think about that. And I will do whatever I can to make that, you know, the way that makes you most comfortable. And she, you know, she said, well, I'll let me think about it. But she said, I think that the mechanics would be that we'd probably have a hospital bed or something for you maybe. But she said, she said she didn't know. And that's fine. But, you know, we had the conversation. But these are not, you know, they're not easy conversations for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, also, and this is a very difficult thing, but I guess we're getting near the end here, but let me just put this out there. As a physician, you know, one has access to all sorts of medications and drugs and all this kind of thing. And I don't know if you want to talk at all about an elective end of life, but I've obviously given it some thought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if things get, not so much for me, but if I'm feeling just ashamed or guilty that my family is just having to do too much for me, you know, should I just kind of speed this whole thing along? And once again, you know, I discussed that with my friend Peter, and you know, Peter watched his mother die, and he said, you know, Jeff, I think you're trying to control too much here. You have to understand that you're not the only one doing the dying. Everyone is going to die a little bit when you die. Mm-hmm. And if you just sort of, you know, pull the plug when things get hard, you just sort of vanish. And if you vanish, you've deprived people of the chance to show you how much they care for you. And you deprive them of understanding why it is that you have to leave. And so, I've gone on record as saying I do believe that one should have the option of electively ending one's life, but I'd have to say I'm much more hesitant to exercise that. But once again, it's something that's worth talking about.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay, one last question. Where are you keeping the coffin?
Oh, it's down in Peter's shop. We have a wood-burning fire down there, and it's been really cold in Kansas City of late, as it has been everywhere. And so we have this wood stove totally stoked up with nice oak, and Peter and I sit in front of the fire, and then to our right is this beautiful piece of wood, and we turn, we put our feet up on it, and we drink a beer. And it's there, and it's something that talks to us, and it's a reminder of our friendship, and it's a reminder of the frailty of life, and it's a reminder of how we should live life.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Jeffrey Peeler, thank you so much for spending this time and sharing your thoughts with us. It's been a magical and enlightening hour, and it flew by way too fast.
Well, thank you so much, Gail. I'm very flattered that you cared for my opinion. I really am. Thank you.
Thank you. So remember, you can download resources from my website at agoodgoodbye.com. And remember, talking about sex won't make you pregnant. Talking about funerals won't make you dead. So everybody, start a conversation today.
Joining us on today's edition of A Good Goodbye. This and other programs in the series can be downloaded free of charge on iTunes. A Good Goodbye is heard every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Central on the Rockstar Radio Network. So return next week as we join Gail and her guests for another insightful conversation.